done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right, hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat, Freddy. But never the ferrets.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 367 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we like to start off every episode by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all of you men, women, and service animals for everything you do on a daily basis.
Thank you guys so much. Always continued prayers for you all. And when you all guys are out, make sure if you see a veteran, make sure you say thank you, because I know it means the world to them. So you guys keep keeping us safe, and we'll keep praying for you all.
And not only that, any civil service worker, it doesn't matter if it's a doctor or a nurse or fireman or EMS, just police officer, they don't get the thanks that they need. And on top of that, special thanks to everybody fighting the fires out in Hawaii right now.
Yeah, bless your all's heart.
I heard earlier, I think the death toll is really close to 100 now.
Oh, really?
From the wildfires out there. I know we've checked on a couple of our friends that live out there to make sure that they're okay. But, you know, our hearts and thoughts are with you guys and right now for everything that you're dealing with out there in Hawaii.
Absolutely. You guys, please take care.
Tracy, I was talking to someone day before yesterday who's really struggling right now. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes I don't know what to say.
Well, yeah, that would be hard sometimes.
But it's not always about what to say. It's sometimes about lending an ear. And I think that's the important thing. So if you know somebody that you think might be struggling, talk to them. Even if you don't know what to say, even if you don't feel like you have any advice, sometimes more than half the battle is just having somebody listen to you.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And if your goal is to make that person feel better about what's going on in their life, just listen.
Yeah, because, you know, that means a lot to people, because some people just feel like nobody wants to hear what's going on in their life just because, you know, they got their own stuff going on. But it does make a difference. So please reach out, guys. Somebody's always there to listen for you all. We have our group, which is amazing. I love you guys so much for all that you do. And we're just so very proud of you guys for reaching out like you do. Also, if you want to call the crisis hotline, you can call it 988. You can also text at 741-741. And if you need to, reach out to Jerry or I, and we'll be happy to give you our phone number. You know, just if you just need to talk to somebody, we're always there for you.
Absolutely. Tracy, we've got a fun episode tonight.
Oh, boy.
First of all, we have a special guest tonight, Eric Freeman Sims from the Unseen Paranormal podcast. Eric is a fantastic podcaster, and he's got one of those voices that's just like the perfect radio slash podcast voice.
Very nice. Some people are just blessed like that.
And he's going to MC the Gatlinburg Show with us and the Confessionals podcast.
Oh, nice. Yeah, wonderful.
We just locked that down in the last couple of days.
Good.
I don't even think we've updated the website yet. It's been so fresh, but yeah, Eric's going to MC the event, so I'm super excited about that.
Well, I cannot wait to meet him.
Episode tonight, guess what it is? You don't know, because I haven't said anything to you about it.
I have no clue.
Past Lives Number 5.
Oh, yay!
Tracy, we constantly hear from listeners that their favorite episodes are the Past Lives episode.
You know who's about to have a past life? This damn fly that keeps buzzing around my head.
That could be your Aunt Margaret.
Calm down. My Lord. Well, Aunt Margaret needs to go somewhere and settle her butt down. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like Aunt Margaret would be like, you remember I used to change your diaper and now I poop in your potato salad. I thought that was a better joke than that, but apparently not. Okay. We're going to jump right in on our fifth episode. I don't know, other than Ghost, obviously, or Poltergeist, we did. I don't think we've done five special episodes on any topic other than this. Maybe some of the rock and roll stuff.
All right. Now, I always like these episodes. They're just so interesting.
I do, too, and I think I found some cool stories tonight. So let's just jump right in. This first story tonight is that of Nicola Weider. W-H-E-A-T-E-R.
Okay.
As a five-year-old, she told her mother that she had lived a past life. Now, this was supposedly in a village called Haworth. This is over in Great Britain. It's in England, near West Yorkshire. And obviously, this took the family aback.
I'm sure.
This wasn't the first sign of things, though. That actually happened 3 years earlier on her second birthday. She was given a stuffed animal for her birthday, a little dog that she named Muff. Well, the two-year-old said that it was the same name as the dog that she had before.
Aww.
As time went on, she would talk to this toy stuffed dog. In these conversations, she would share experiences that they supposedly had together in the past life. So one day out of the blue, Nicola looked right at her mom, Kathleen, and she asked, "Why am I a girl this time? Because the last time I was a boy."
Wow.
Well, confused, her mother asked Nicola what she meant by that. And of course, she's talking about the this time part. Oh, what a surprise it was for when she found out that the little girl said, "Well, when Miss Benson was my mother, I was a little boy with a dog named Muff."
I mean, she must have been freaking out at this point.
Well, Kathleen didn't know anybody with that last name. Nobody with the name of Benson. And she was curious where Nicola got that name at. Well, then the little girl described in detail how Miss Benson would tie her hair up funny, is what the little girl said, and she wore a long skirt with an apron like the one that her doll wears. But she didn't like her father because his face was always dirty. Now, she said, so your father's, not your father now, but your father then, his face was always dirty. And the little girl said, oh yeah, it was dirty because he worked on the railroad. He also had large, heavy boots that I didn't like. All right. So, pressed a little bit, mother said, well, where did you live? And she said, well, we lived in a small house near the train tracks. Unfortunately, she couldn't remember her name when she was a boy. She did remember having two sisters. Both were younger than her, and that's important. She said that the house that they lived in was a gray stone in between four houses that were all joined together in a row. Now, this is a five-year-old.
That is saying this. That is crazy.
She said in back of the house was a big field. And in that field, the little boy would often go back and play with Muff and another friend. And sometimes the friend would play near the railroad tracks, which his mother didn't like him doing. So one day, when they were playing on the tracks, he saw a man walking down the track swinging a lamp. But a fast train came up from behind and knocked him over.
Oh.
He was taken to the hospital. The little boy was knocked over, not the guy with the...
Right.
He was taken to the hospital, and at the hospital, he kept being asked if he was all right, but he couldn't answer them. Unfortunately, he went to sleep and died. This is all what this little girl is saying happened in her previous life. To her. Yes.
In her previous life.
In her previous life as a boy. So keep in mind, this is all coming from a five-year-old. She said that she went to heaven and met other people before being born again. But she added, I didn't really die because I came to you. And now, you're my other mommy. Kathleen decided to take a little trip to Haworth. She'd never been there before, and she knew her daughter had definitely never been there. But eventually, Kathleen became lost on the trip there.
She just went by herself?
It was her and the little girl.
Oh, okay, okay.
So they get lost on the way there. Well, Kathleen said, I don't know what to do. I'm lost. And Nicola said, don't worry. I know the way to go. I know the way to get there.
Oh, man.
She guided her mother down some unmarked roads, and they eventually arrived in the village of Haworth. But Nicola was not done yet. She then showed her mom where the house was that they used to live in when she was a boy in the previous life. The address, 12 Chapel Lane, Oakwell. It was one of four graystone terrace houses. The exact description that Nicola had given.
Wow. Before. Mom must have been, what in the heck?
So they go to the parish church to see if they might be able to get any info on the Benson family. The director of the church was not familiar with anybody by that name in the area, but he gave them permission to search the parish records. They could look for birth, death, marriages, but he told them that they probably was going to be a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen goes on about her search, and she came across the last name Benson. This was an entry for the birth of a baby boy named John Henry Benson, June 20th, 1875.
Oh, my goodness.
The father, Thomas Benson, was a railway plate layer. The mom was Lucy Benson. So Kathleen then researched the archive of the City of Bradford Metro Council offices. The gentleman by the name of Ian Dewhurst was actually assisting her there. They checked the census period for the year 1881, and the address of 12 Chapel Lane showed Thomas Benson, 29 years old, railway plate layer, wife Lucy, 30 years old, daughter Hafia Barb Benson, 3 years old, and Selena Benson, 6 months old. No mention of John Henry Benson in the 1881 census, so he must have died between his birth in 1875 and the census of 6 years later in 1881. The fact that Nicola remembered having two sisters means John would have died between 1980 and 1981. Because
you mean
1880 and 1881, because it would have had to have been after the birth of the younger sister, who was only 6 months old at the time of that census. He would have been 6 years old when he was struck by the train.
Now, did they have any record of that?
They couldn't find any record of that.
I wonder if she told the priest or whoever that was, the guy she was talking to, about what she found out.
Oh, I'm not sure. Oh. I'm sure she probably went back. There probably was some conversations, mm-hmm. but I'm not privy to what on there. So let's review. Nicola, 5-year-old, remembered her last name, her father's profession, the town she lived in, the type of house that it was, and was able to guide her mother there.
Without GPS.
Without GPS. Actually, without even cell phones. This was even before then. All from a family that existed over 100 years before she was even born.
I mean, what do you even say about that? I mean, you have to believe it.
this didn't even take into the fact that things we can't prove, like the dog's name or the actual death by the trains or any of that stuff.
It's a pretty daggone amazing.
All right. This next story is awesome, too. I got good stories tonight. I dug deep for these.
Mm-hmm.
I could do another 10 episodes of these. There's so many of these stories out there. We're going to go to New Delhi, India for our next story. Rina Gupta. Rina Gupta was a 2-year-old Hindu girl. She told her mother that she had a husband. 2 years old.
Okay.
Tells her mom that she's got a husband. She said he was a very bad man who murdered her.
Oh.
Rina's behavior would get much stranger as time went along. She started to climb out on the balcony of their apartment and stare out into the street, just looking into the crowds. She was always searching for someone. When the family would be out for a drive, she was constantly looking for someone on the roads, as she would other cars driving by, stuff like that. When she was asked who she was looking for, she said her husband and her children. Rina started to criticize the way that her mom would cook and clean. It's not the way that she used to do it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, can you imagine coming to your mom and saying, yeah, my husband murdered me? I mean, at 2 years old.
2 years old. No concept of death. On one occasion, Rina and her mother were at the market. They're out shopping, buying their, you know, whatever they got there at the market. It's an outdoor market.
Mm-hmm.
Rina wandered off. She wasn't found until sometime later. And when her mom asked what she was doing, she said she followed a woman who used to come to her house. So she found some woman that apparently was somebody she knew in a previous life.
Wow.
The past life comments wouldn't stop there. She kept talking about her children and how much she hated her husband. She also hated being away from her kids. So one day, a woman named Vihinda Cowan, she was a teaching colleague of Rina's mother, had heard about a family by the name of Singh. That was her last name. They were in another part of the city, but they had a story that matched up to what Rina was saying. Upon doing some checking, she made contact with Sudan Kishan Singh and his wife. They were parents of a young lady who was no longer alive by the name of Katie Bowen. Katie had been murdered by her husband on June 21st, 1961.
1961?
Yes.
Okay.
The family was intrigued by the comments that Rina had been saying, and they felt that she could somehow be a link to their dead daughter. So the couple agreed to meet with the Gupta family. They come to the Gupta's home. Rina was not aware that there was going to be anybody coming there.
Mm-hmm.
So she was actually asleep. When she woke up and she came into the room and saw the family, her face lit up. She got a huge smile and she said, "They are my mother and father."
Wait, what the mom and dad do, I wonder?
I don't know. But the next day, the Singhs brought a young lady in by the name of Sana, which was Katie's younger sister. At which point, Rina amazingly called her by her nickname of Sano. Rina later visited the Singh's home, where she noticed photographs. Her husband, Sajit Singh, the one who killed her, ended up hearing about Rina's little stories, her claims, and he decided he wanted to pay the family a visit. But Rina had no desire to meet with him and refused it. She said, "He will kill me again."
Oh my God.
He had actually been charged with her murder and his murder of his wife's brother. He was given life, but was freed after 10 years for good behavior.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense.
So this family not only lost their daughter to him, they lost their son,
yeah, too.
In 1975, he did actually meet with Rena. Rena was 9 years old, but she was still scared to death of him. She posed in a pretty famous picture that you can find out there. She posed in this picture next to him, and she was reluctantly sitting on the armrest of a chair while he was sitting in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
When he tried to put his arm around her, she threw a fit. And Rena eventually met her, quote unquote, four children, three daughters and a son, and she greeted them all with smiles.
I mean, what does that guy think about this? I mean, that had to be like, oh my God, she came back to haunt me. I mean, what in the heck?
I don't know why he wanted to meet with her.
Well, I mean,
and I don't know why she would agree to meet with him, or why her family would even want him anywhere around.
Okay, but why does she want to meet her kids? I mean, how do you explain that?
I don't know, but you would want to still meet your kids if that was your prized thing in life. And now you know they're here and they still exist.
Well, I guess that's true. But I guess she just didn't say who she was. I mean, you know, she didn't spill that truth about it.
I don't know what she did.
Oh, she couldn't have.
She might have. I mean, everybody else knew what the deal was. So why wouldn't their kids?
Were the kids grown at this point?
I don't know, because let's see, if you do some math on it. She died in what they say, 1961?
Mm-hmm.
This would have been 1975, so it would have been 14 years later. They would have at least been 14 or 15 years old.
And so how old was she at this time then?
At the time she met the kids, she was 9 or 11. She was 9.
Oh. By the way, kids, I'm your 9-year-old mother. Okay, that didn't sound weird at all. That's craziness, man.
Well, I saved the best one for last.
Oh my gosh.
This one's my favorite one. The last story comes from Scotland, and this is the story of Jenny McLeod. Jenny was born on November 7th, 1949, in Aberdeen, Scotland. When Jenny was 2 years old, she started talking about her previous life. So one day, picture this. Jenny is at the table. Her grandmother, Mary Gordon, is sitting at the table and she's feeding her. Jenny's mother was also at the table. So Jenny, out of nowhere, looks at her grandmother and says, "Do you remember when I used to feed you, Granny?" Then she started talking about a hill called The Lump at Portree, which was another town in Scotland, a town she hadn't been to. She then mentions a house that had its own pier and that there were steps, which was a shortcut that allowed you to walk up the hill instead of having to take the road all the way around. She also spoke about all the nice dogs that they used to play with all the time. Well, Jenny's current family didn't have any dogs.
Okay.
So after telling these stories, Jenny took a nap, and she never talked about these things again. But her mother and grandmother decided, you know what? We're going to talk to our minister, Reverend Mueller, because we're curious. He found the whole story fascinating, so much so that he sent the summary of the story to a colleague of his in Edinburgh. That colleague then sent it to Professor Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
He's an expert in the field of reincarnation. After reading the summary, he gets on a plane and flies to Scotland to do some research himself. And after interviewing several family members, the professor felt that the knowledge that Jenny had could not have been obtained in any type of a natural way. This had to be something she knew by some strange type of situation. Well, Jenny's mother said that Jenny's statements corresponded to Bessie Gordon, which just happened to be Jenny's great-grandmother. Bessie was born in Portree, where she lived her entire life. She lived near the sea, and as Jenny described, she lived in a house that did have a pier. Matter of fact, the only pier in the area. Her house was also near a hill that they called the Lump.
Whoa.
There were also stepping stones, which provided a shortcut to get to the nearby town of Seafield. Again, just as Jenny described. She also mentioned dogs. Well, Bessie had raised Westie Terriers. Her great-grandmother Bessie had 9 children, one of whom was Mary Gordon. That was, of course, her grandmother that was feeding Jenny at the time. Margaret was Bessie's favorite granddaughter. Margaret was Jenny's mom.
Oh, man.
Remember, it was Mary Gordon who was feeding Jenny at the table when she made those remarks. Remember, I used to feed you, Granny. That would have made sense if this was really her mom. It's crazy. Bessie was also very fond of her granddaughter, Margaret. So Jenny's mother, Bessie Gordon, died at the age of 83 in 1948. Jenny was born in 1949, exactly 1 year later. Margaret had always said that Jenny resembled her great-grandmother, not only in her looks, but her mannerisms. She would speak in a similar style. And that was even before. So, Tracy, those are 3 completely different stories of possible past lives. Again, every story I hear just convinces me more and more that reincarnation is a real thing.
Oh, yeah. I totally believe it. It's just amazing the details that they remember at such a young age.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean.
But that's the whole thing. That's the only time they remember it is at that young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very specific. And I think it's amazing.
It is amazing.
I wonder if we were something in a past life.
Oh, I'm sure we were.
I wonder what.
I don't know.
I hope I was tall. You know,
we can get you one of those past life regression hypnosis things done.
That'd be kind of cool to do.
If you can believe in them. I don't know if I 100% believe in those.
Well,
but some people do, and that's all that matters. All right. So we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and we'll be back, and we will talk about a couple of show updates, and then we will listen to Eric Freeman Sims.
Sounds wonderful.
All right, Tracy, so this will be quick because we have absolutely, for the first time I can ever remember.
Ever.
No Patreon subscribers this week and no iTunes reviews.
I know. What the hell's going on here?
And this was a full week. This is actually Sunday when we're recording. Sometimes we'll get that if it's only been like Wednesday and we have to record early.
Yeah.
But
well, that's okay.
Yeah, is what it is. But
it is,
so we don't have any of those.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, I was talking to Robin Troop about the cruise. There's still plenty of room on the cruise. If you need information, Robin, their phone numbers and all that at Vacation Experts, go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com. There is a tab specifically for the cruise. All the information you could possibly want.
Sounds wonderful.
And you still have plenty of time to make payments on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you jump in now, it's like $100 a month. Mm-hmm. Can't beat that. Also, we have, as I told you, the Gatlinburg show coming up. That is September 30th. There are 7 tickets left.
That's crazy. 7. Yes.
That's going to be awesome. We also have the Bell Mansion show coming up. And I want to bring this one up because that's not the next show. It's the one after. But this is in less than 2 weeks, Justin is going to go up at the Bell Mansion and they are going to pick a winner out of anybody who's bought their tickets.
How fun.
To spend the night with us. There can only be one winner, and it has to be somebody who's bought tickets. So if you haven't bought your tickets yet, there's 20 left. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, you need to get your tickets sometime in the next week and a half to be eligible to win that. You'll obviously still be able to come, if not, but your name won't be there to be able to draw your name out of the random generator. So you'll have an excellent chance. I mean, right now it's 1 out of 30.
Perfect. Getting excited about that one. Actually, you know what?
It's better than that because a lot of people bought two tickets. So there's only probably, and there's been some single tickets sold, but I bet there's only 20 names.
Mm-hmm.
So right now there's only like 20 names. So you could, excellent shot at getting your name drawn.
Yeah. It'll be fun. We're excited about this.
Yep. It's going to be a blast. And as a reminder, you wouldn't be eligible with these, but we do now have tickets available for just a live show.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the live show, the meet and greet and all that from 6 to 9:30, I think is what it is. Mm-hmm. You get all that and you'll still be inside the Bell Mansion and check all that stuff, but don't get the investigation or the tour with that one. But it's also only $25, where the other tickets are $75 that you get everything.
Mm-hmm.
So 20 tickets left for $75 if you want to do the investigation, the tour and all that. Be a long day. I did add in something because somebody pointed out to us that there really wasn't a break for dinner. And to go from 4 o'clock till 2 in the morning is a long time without that. So we've actually got it set up now from 8:45 till 10 o'clock. So we'll finish the live show, and then you can take a break for dinner. And there's all kinds of little restaurants within a couple blocks radius of the
Bell. Yeah.
So we want to make sure you people eat.
Of course.
We don't want anybody passing out from famine while we're trying to investigate.
We don't need no hangry people there.
And last but not least, next weekend. So next Saturday, 6 days away, our 7th anniversary show in Detroit, Mysterious Circumstances, Ohio. It's going to be a blast. We got some special stuff planned. So
yeah, I'm very excited about that. I hope to see you and can't wait to see you guys out there.
And Mojo Lobster will be there.
Yes. And I cannot wait.
So we're excited.
Very excited.
All right, guys. Like I said, no reviews, no Patreon. So we'll zip right into Eric Freeman Sims. And remember, he will be the special MC for the Gatlinburg show.
Sounds great, babe.
Hey guys, you know, I love it when I discover podcasters that have actually been out there for a while that I was unfamiliar with. And every once in a while, we'll have somebody that'll kind of tip us off to somebody. And that's what happened in this case. Our buddy Bob Hicks from Tales from the Dark said, "Hey, do you know Eric Freeman Sims?" And I said, "You know, I don't think I do." And he said, "He's got a great podcast called Unseen Paranormal." I checked it out. Absolutely loved it. And I said, man, I've got to get this guy on. So that's what we've done. Eric, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invite. And yeah, like you said, Bob introduced us, and I've known Bob and Brittany for a while. They're great people, and I'm thankful to him for introducing us.
Well, you know what's funny is when I first listened, I was like, dude, Eric has got like the perfect voice for podcasting. You definitely have a radio voice, man. It's like, it's one of the voices that I wished I had something like that.
Yeah. I get that all the time. And people, I get asked all the time on my show, do you make your voice any deeper? And I'm like, no, I don't need to put any, there's no treble. There's no bass put in there. There's no effect. This is just how I talk. It's just what it is. But yeah, I've got a good friend of mine, Alan Searcy. He's a paranormal author I'm good friends with. And he always calls me the man with the velvet voice. And so whenever he signed his books for me, that's what he puts, the man with the velvet or golden voice. I'm like, all right, whatever. It's just my voice.
Yeah. You, I put you and Tyler Allen kind of in the same class as the voices that I'm like, if I had somebody that I could have just walk around and narrate my life, it would be one of you too. So
thank you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Unseen Paranormal Podcast. You're getting ready to coming up really close in about a week or so on having your 3-year anniversary. You started back in August of 2020. What's it been like? For somebody who doesn't know the podcast, how would you describe it?
I have a guest on every week, and we cover everything from cryptids to time slips to time travel. My forte is ghost. So I do a lot of things with paranormal investigators. But I started the show because I wanted to, for myself, to talk to all these different people. So I've had some paracelebrities on and got their take on the paranormal, but I also talked to local paranormal teams out of Kentucky, here in Tennessee, where I live. And I just kind of wanted to talk to everybody because I think it takes all of us in the paranormal to try to figure this out. And so just talking to people, you know, authors, historians, researchers. I have a lot of shows. I just put out an episode about Fort Mifflin with Greg O'Brien, and he's an investigator. So got his take from an investigator standpoint, but also got the history of Fort Mifflin as well. Because I think it's important to know the history, especially if you're an investigator. A lot of us are big into the history, as well as the ghost and things like that too.
Yeah. I always tell people when they ask about our show, You know, it's like it's a paranormal show, but realistically, 75% of it is usually history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A good chunk of mine, probably about 50 to 60%. Early on, my first season, I did a lot more history, and kind of did a tour around Tennessee with a lot of people doing history and the hauntings. And now I've gotten branched out into other states and things as my audience has grown to other countries and other states and things like that. Here in a couple of weeks, I've got a pretty good following in New Zealand and Australia, so. To cater to them, I've got a guy coming on to talk about haunted Auckland. So I'm trying to, you know, get, and also to, for us here in the United States, to get a different take from a different country on hauntings and how they investigate and, you know, the type of things that they deal with and their opinions on the paranormal.
I always think it's funny when you talk to podcasters, especially paranormal podcasters from other countries, and you find out that, you know, 90% of their audience is America because, you know, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Ireland, in England, even though they've got so much paranormal history, it's like the fascination with the listeners and the people over there isn't near as strong as what it is in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that as well, even though you'll see all of these, YouTube is huge with people from UK doing videos of investigations, but yeah, not as many podcasters. And I think I've heard that from my audience in New Zealand, Australia, that, you know, they wish there was more shows geared towards them. So that's part of the reason I'm trying to cater to them and try to cater to different people from different states. It's also the same in the United States. I think different parts of the country are more into the paranormal than others. And so you'll, especially like New England, you know, there's so many paranormal expos, so many podcasts, so many paranormal groups and things going on in New England. And then you get down to the South and yeah, there's some of us, but it's not as prevalent as up there. And then you get out like the West Coast and it's definitely not as prevalent as it is on the East side of the United States. So I think even in the United States, there's a dichotomy between these different places in the country and also the different paranormal phenomena. When you get out to the West Coast, you're talking about a lot more cryptid people. And even down in Texas, you got a lot more cryptid people than you do ghost. And things like that. And then in the Midwest, of course, you got Skinwalker Ranch. So it's interesting how it's different, even in our own country. And then you look at other countries. And I think it also is a cultural thing, too, because in some countries, their beliefs on the paranormal are way more open to their culture. So it's more of a everyday normal thing to them.
That makes perfect sense. You said you're the ghost guy. So
yeah.
What is your favorite? Do you have a favorite paranormal story of all time?
I don't know. I've had so many things happen to me personally and things happen to friends. The one story that I want to tell you, I can't because I'm bound by an NDA for a TV show that I'm telling that story. Perfect. On.
Well, let's go more towards like the famous stories. Like for example, my favorite paranormal story is like the Bell Witch. I think that's a fantastic one. Nellie Bly is probably my second favorite. So I mean, is there any one of the famous ones out there that everybody knows about that really stands out to you as like one that grabs your attention more than the other?
I find the Bell Witch fascinating because I live in Middle Tennessee, so I'm not very far from Adams. And so growing up hearing all the folklore and the stories behind that and kind of diving deep into that one. To see what's true and what's not, because there's a lot of mistruths out there about the Bell Witch. But yeah, it's definitely a fascinating story. Yeah, that's a big one on my radar. As far as locations, I think Waverly Hills is fascinating because of the history. You know, maybe not just one story there, but just as a location, all the history, excluding the hauntings, just the place is beautiful. It's massive. But all the stories up there, it's hard to pin down one story because I want to hear them all. And, when I think I've heard one story or read one book and had a guest on that, I'm like, oh, I love this story about, you know, the haunted house that you grew up in or whatever. Then I'll have another guest on or I'll hear another story. So it's hard to pin down, you know, one story, but the Bell Witch has always been fascinating. Like I said, growing up in Middle Tennessee, for sure.
Give me a personal story, something that's happened to you that you can talk about.
There's so many. I've investigated for over 20 years. I started out when I was a teenager before the TV shows, and I didn't even know there was such thing as a ghost hunter. We were just, me and my friends were going out, you know, just to try to prove to us. My father died when I was 14, so that kind of threw me more into trying to prove there's something beyond us to myself and things like that. So we would sneak into this plantation home called Carton Plantation in Franklin, Tennessee. And it was kind of the thing you did in high school if you grew up around here. And the place is reportedly haunted. So we go up there and sneak in about 3 o'clock in the morning. And we were walking back across the field one night and we heard what sounded like a horse galloping and you could hear like the horse whinny. And two of my friends were about 10 feet behind me. And the field was about, they hadn't mowed it in a while. So it's about probably knee deep. And all of a sudden I feel like this static cold breeze go through me. And then I looked on the right side and you could see the grass moving in a straight line and you could still hear the galloping. So my two friends run up that were behind me and they're like, what did a ghost horse just run through you? What just happened? And I'm like, I don't know, but that was a weird experience to have. And that place is insanely haunted. And unfortunately they don't do paranormal out there, but we experienced all kinds of stuff, but having a ghost horse run through me was definitely a weird experience. And then having two people, you know, hear and see and validate. Yeah, that happened. That was interesting. I think that's the only time I've ever had a spirit go through me, as far as I know.
It's funny because you mentioned that's kind of where everybody, you know, when you were young, that's kind of what everybody did. And for me, when I was young, the place that everybody did was Waverly Hills. That was, you know, even up to the point to where when I was in my early 30s, you know, I still would go up to Waverly. They didn't have any security. They didn't have, this was before Tina and Charlie Maddenly bought the place, and you could just go up there anytime you wanted to. And it was, that's where all the graffiti and stuff came from in there, is back when there was no security. And you literally would move a piece of plywood away from the open door and just walk in. And I mean, it was that simple and nobody cared. You know, now you couldn't do that if you wanted to. They got so much security and stuff up there. But yeah, it was that was the place for teenagers back when I was young.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't condone trespassing, and that's been a long
time. No, absolutely not.
I think the statute of limitations is over on that. But yeah, we used to sneak in that place all the time. And like I said, unfortunately, the head of the director for the Franklin Battlefield Trust, he's threatened his employees, you know, with firing them if they talk about the paranormal. So they don't do any kind of ghost stuff at all, which is sad, because I think that's part of the history as well of a place, because you're connecting to that history and those people that lived and went through the Civil War. There's a huge Civil War battle on their front lawn, the Battle of Franklin. And, you know, they use this as a hospital and just so much, there's still big bloodstains in the floor. And so I think the paranormal stuff is part of the history as well, because even though the tour guides can't talk about it, they have experiences themselves. And, you know, so I just, hopefully they get a new director in there and they see how much money they can make by doing the paranormal as well.
It's funny because some of these places, I think old South Pittsburgh Hospital, they were all into the paranormal. Then I think there was a stretch with one owner where he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then they got a new owner and then he's back into doing the paranormal and stuff. It's just like some of these people don't understand A, the history, and how many people are interested, and B, they don't understand where their bread is buttered. Because when you got a place like, you know, like that or Waverly or something, you can make, you know, a decent amount of money, even if it's just to do renovations to the place through the paranormal.
Yeah. And that's what the Mattinglys, I mean, they've been their goal all along, is to, you know, restore the place like they have over the past 20 years and to keep it up. And that was the whole point of doing the haunted house up there that they do. And I think they're back to that this year, now that they're back in charge. But yeah, Ronnie D, he also runs the Harriman Hospital out in East Tennessee now, around Knoxville. And it's a place, it's a way to keep the places up. And I think that's why a lot of these historical places like Octagon Hall in Franklin, Kentucky, I love that place. And it wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the paranormal. I mean, you know, they have day tours and things, but if it wasn't for investigators renting it out or doing events there, you know, they wouldn't be able to survive. And I think there are a lot of those places around. And I think during the pandemic, a lot of places that weren't open to the paranormal before or had been burned by the paranormal or by TV, a lot of them opened back up. I know in Franklin, Tennessee, the Lotes House was one of those. They got burned by the Tennessee Ray Chasers when they did Haunted Live there. They were asked not to do reenactments and to provoke, and the producers did anyway. And so that they soured them in the paranormal until some of us went in there and talked to them and they got a new director. And, you know, we told them, you know, we're not like that. We're respectful and we'll come in and be respectful. And so a lot of them have seen a different side. Another place that as we've kind of turned around here in Nashville is Two Rivers Mansion as well. They never had paranormal investigations, and we've been lucky with me and my business partners of going in there, and they let us do a private investigation. And then we had the first public investigation ever there a couple of weeks ago. And so people finally got to go in and see this beautiful mansion that they've heard stories about and things. And so they're starting to see the financial benefit of it, you know, because they've been surviving off of weddings and historical tours. And so yeah, a lot of these places, like you're saying, once they see the benefit of it and they see that investigators, most of us are respectful and we're all about the history and we don't provoke, I think a lot of them are a lot more open to it. Especially when they can make $1,000 in one night and they don't have to do anything, you know, but open the doors.
Now, I'm not familiar with that location. Give me a little bit of the history on that place.
So Two Rivers Mansion was owned by the McGavick family. And the McGavick family were also the ones that owned Carton Plantation that I was talking about in Franklin that we used to sneak into. They were a huge founding family in Nashville. There's a high school, McGavick High School. There's McGavick Pike. And Two Rivers, there's the original 1802 house is there, which is a log house. That's a two-story log house. And they don't have a whole lot of records on that because they were lost in fires over the years and things. But the McGavicks, when they bought the property, it's on a hill kind of overlooking the river. And when they bought the property, they lived in that log cabin while they built the big mansion. And this big mansion was just kind of a show of their wealth and their power. And if you ever heard of Opryland Hotel, mm-hmm. Opryland, the theme park, all of that was their land. And Yeah, they owned all of that land. Well, the last surviving McGavick, she left the land to the church, all of that land. Well, they turned around and sold it against her wishes after she died to Opryland for Opryland to be built. I believe the last surviving McGavick, I believe she died in 1960 something, 70 something. And so they think that she still haunts Opryland Hotel as well and haunted the theme park because they went against her wishes and sold the land. And she was the last surviving McGavick. They still have some in Franklin, they still have some relatives living, some ancestors, but most of that family's kind of died out. But yeah, that's the big story is Miss McGavick haunts that whole area because of that.
It's funny you mentioned the Opryland Hotel because, you know, we're getting ready to have our 7-year anniversary on the 21st of August to be when we put out our first episode. And I actually put that out on that day. The 22nd is my birthday, but the 21st was a good friend of mine, Kevin. It was his birthday, and he passed away in September, it'll be 10 years. And so I started it in honor of him because we were always close and our birthdays were a day apart. So I started on him. But when I actually found out about his death, I was actually in the Opryland Hotel.
Wow.
So coincidences, you know, all over the place.
Yeah. Synchronicities. Yeah.
So I saw that you have a new YouTube series starting to come out, I guess, and another other podcast platforms called Strange Chapters started in September. Looks interesting. Tell me the premise behind that.
So I talked to all these authors on my show, and a lot of them are independent authors, and I've heard from them over the years that, you know, they're happy to have shows like mine and yours and us having them on because they don't have a big backing like if they had a publishing company with the advertising budget. And so I came up with this idea for the show that I would feature 3 to 4 stories that I'll narrate because, again, I hear about my voice all the time that people want me to narrate things. And so instead of having a guest on, I will feature an author every episode and I'll narrate 3 or 4 of their stories. And then I'll put video to it that goes with the story on YouTube. So the audio will be out, podcast platforms. And the video will be on YouTube. So it's everything from, it's not just ghost stories. It's everything from cryptid stories, Bigfoot encounters, cryptid encounters to police having paranormal encounters and Yeah, all kind of weird, unexplained things, unexplained crimes. Got some body snatching, interesting history stories in there too. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of run the gamut of everything strange and weird, but to also kind of highlight these indie authors that are, you know, doing good things in the paranormal and collecting these stories to hand down. And I've heard from my audience that they want more stories. So I figured, this will be a good platform to do that and do good things for some independent authors as well.
Tell me about, as far as paranormal investigating, have you ever had a situation to where you felt like you were in over your head, where something happened and you're like, this was a little more than I bargained for at this point in time? You ever had any moments where you were a little scared or shaken up, or you just felt like that something was over your head for that moment?
I think the first time I ever went to Octagon Hall, we had rented it out, and I was a bit more skeptical. I call myself a skeptical believer anyway, because I'm the kind of person, I got to see it to believe it type person. But when we went to Octagon Hall, we were supposed to be there for 2 nights investigating, and they told us about all this different phenomena and the portals and, you know, all these things on the property that happened. And I was just kind of, I don't know, dismissive of most of it, except for, you know, I guess the ghost stuff. And that place kind of chewed me up and spit me out. The first night, we're supposed to be there 2 nights, and the first night it drained me so much energy wise that I was sick for 3 days. And I came home that night and did not go back the next night because I was sick with the flu, like flu like symptoms. But 2 days later, I was perfectly fine. But that place is, man, I watched the other investigator's cell phone lift off the table, move over and fall straight into the floor. Saw that twice with my own eyes. And of course, camera battery was dead. Didn't catch it on film, but it was down in the basement where they said there's a portal. And yeah, there's definitely some negative things that come through that place. It was one of those places that kind of shook me a little bit and made me rethink the whole thing about portals and kind of like that place is kind of like Skinwalker Ranch, where you have all this phenomenon. They've caught UAPs flying above Octagon Hall. People have seen cryptids like Dogman and Bigfoot on the property. It's the only investigation we've ever done where they told me to bring a handgun, because they have mountain lions and things on the property. And if you're out in the middle of the night on the property, you know, you need to be able to defend yourself. And so that place is probably the only place that really has shook me as far as, okay, all right. Like, you know, I kind of believe y'all now, you know, going in being too skeptical, I guess.
That makes me so mad, because I was supposed to go back at the beginning of February. And yeah, we had it all booked. And then that's where I had a little bit of a medical emergency at the end of January, where I kind of died for a little bit. And they had to do CPR and busted a bunch of ribs and sternum. And I couldn't go because I just wouldn't up to it. And yeah, and I've been wanting to go for so long. And we had it set up for like 6 months. And it was like, oh, man, of all the places to have to miss, that was the one I didn't want to have to miss. And I'll eventually make it out there, because it's only 3.5 hours from my house.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm only about an hour from Franklin down in Middle Tennessee. I live right outside of Nashville. I'm glad you're still with us. I'm glad they brought you back. I was a medic for 15 years on the ambulance. So yeah, I would, nice. I've cracked some ribs and some sternums in my day.
Well, I remember calling them up after the fact, because I guess they didn't really cover it in the hospital. And yeah, when I got out, I was like, the lady called, asked how I was doing, the nurse. And so I'm doing good. I said, did they damage some ribs or something when they were there? And she said, oh yeah. She said, if they don't crack ribs, they're not doing it right. And I was like, fair enough.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Well, Eric, it's been a blast having you on. Tell everybody how they can keep up with Unseen Paranormal Podcast and Strange Chapters when that comes out. How can people follow you on social media?
I am all over social media. You can follow my personal page, Eric Freeman Sims, on Facebook, on Instagram and Twitter, under the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. On YouTube, I just started the Strange Chapters YouTube channel. I have Unseen Paranormal Podcast YouTube channel. It is just mainly for people to listen. There's not really video with it, because I don't really do video. But if I don't put episodes on YouTube, then I have people messaging me like, why have you put an episode out? Because I listened to it at work or whatever. So I do put it up on YouTube as well. But yeah, any platform, anywhere you're listening to this podcast, you can find mine. I'm everywhere. And coming up in October, we are putting on the Tennessee Haunts and Legends Expo at the Nashville Fairgrounds. Me and my two business partners, all the money will go to two different charities. One is Trousdale Place, which is a haunted historic location in Gallatin, Tennessee. And the other charity is Animal Rescue Corps. And they bust up puppy meals and things. But tickets are on sale now for that. We're still looking for vendors. We still have some vendor spots if anybody interested in being a vendor. But you can check that out at tnhauntsandlegendsexpo.com.
Awesome. So that might be something. When is that, October?
October 21st.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. That might be something me and Tracy check into because we're actually free that weekend, I believe.
Yeah, we'd love to have y'all. We have a full day of speakers. Our key speakers this year are Brennan Alvis and Mustafa Gattalori from Ghost Hunters. They're two buddies of mine. And they got a new show coming out called Haunted Discoveries that I was able to be a part of. And we got Bigfoot people that day. We've got Pat Fitzhugh is coming to talk about the Bell Witch. We got all kind of awesome speakers. So
awesome. Eric, thanks for coming on, buddy. It's been a blast.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry, for having me.
All right, guys, that wraps up this episode. We hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yes, we do. And we hope to see you guys next week at our show. And we are out of here. And have a blessed week.